Welcome to Cherish or Perish, the show that judges your opinions. On this show, we rewatch movies from the past and pass ultimate judgment on their worthiness. Shall they remain cherished or shall they perish? We are your hosts. I'm Amanda Gimmel-Strauss with
Desiree Grobo.
How's it going, Desiree?
In life, like in general?
Yes.
I had this question from my orthodontist recently. Oh, how's it been going? And I'm like, you know what? I'm alive. And then she's like, ah, me too. And I was like, yeah. I think that that's what's happening. I'm alive.
Yeah. I recently had a doctor's appointment, and I noticed that you, like, quietly stopped bothering to do the depression screenings that used to be so vital at other times. They're like, we know. There's, like, a basket of fucking Zoloft. Kind of in the waiting room. It is June 28th when we're recording this. Actually, I'm glad I saved the date. Tomorrow is the 1 year anniversary of Cherish or Perish. We did our first live show a year ago.
Oh, God.
At the now, sadly, RIP, the Pocket Theater here in Seattle. It was a Pride show. We did with our friends Tara Pozo and Michael Castillo. We did Bound, The Birdcage, and But I'm a Cheerleader. So yeah, that was a really fun show. And here we are, a year later, still churning them out, still making them happen. What a God! Doesn't a year ago seem?
God, I thought it's so interesting to look back on the past and think about how you were for 2018, my Halloween costume was the meme, "This is fine," the dog burning in flames. And I'm like, I had no idea. Like, that doesn't seem the right temperature for that year anymore.
I took a trip to Florida. I went to a theme park. I went to Halloween Hornets. Flew on a plane. Like,
I mean, I did that in February. Like, it's
I just
6 months ago is starting to seem like a different time too.
Oh my, I know, it's just crazy. It's crazy to think how quickly, like, the fact that it is almost July is like, holy shit. But also, like, that a year ago seems like a lifetime ago. Like,
so long ago.
What a time. Speaking of that time, how have you, what have you been watching? What have you been consuming to pass the time lately?
So one thing that I think we've almost watched the entire season is the show called Never Have I Ever. It's on Netflix. It's been out for longer than just a few months. I've heard of it before. Yeah. I don't know when it came out, but I finally got around to starting it, and it is delightful. It's a very good show. It's created by Mindy Kaling. Is that how you say her last name?
Kaling? Yeah. I'm like trying to think if I've ever heard of her name.
I've only seen it written places.
I'm a reader. Yeah, for sure.
So it's created by her. It's really cute. It's set in high school. So it's for, like, coming of age type situation, which I actually really enjoy those stories. I'm always a big fan of, like, kids navigating their drama because it seems so, like, you know, whatever, as an adult, but you, like, you get it because you've been a kid. But then, like, oh gosh, if you only knew, like, these are not the end of your problems, children.
It's funny, like, I haven't even heard of this show. It's like Netflix creates so much content, but if they don't think it's for you, you'll never know it exists. Like,
I think it was trending for a while. Yeah, it was, like, in the top 10 for a while. It's always been suggested on my Netflix, but I hadn't ever hit the trigger on it yet. So I finally got to it.
Have you watched Pen 15? It's on.
No, but that one's been targeted for me as well.
It's great. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's very funny. The writers, who are, of course, adult women, also play the stars, who are, like, 15-year-old girls.
So, oh, I love that. That
it is
like
very fun. All the other actors are real actual teens. It's a very funny show, and also, like, just they're such weirdos, and it's very delightful. speaking of weirdos, not necessarily delightful, I watched Shirley, which is a new, I think it's on Amazon, starring Elizabeth Moss. I don't know if you have been advertised this movie. I heavily was.
I have not.
It is a movie that is based on a book that is a fictional book that is very heavily influenced and referencing of Shirley Jackson's life and also her work. But it is not a biopic, because while she is, like, this character Shirley Jackson is in this movie and is very much based on Shirley Jackson, there are huge parts of her life changed in this movie. Like, in this movie, she doesn't have any kids, which in real life she had 4 kids and, like, wrote extensively about them. Like, those were some of her most famous books, were the ones that she wrote about her children. But so in this movie, it's directed by Josephine Decker. She does a lot of movies that are kind of about complex and intense female relationships. She did, like, Madeline, or Madeline. There's another one I'm forgetting. I am not a big Elizabeth Moss fan, and it took me a minute to, like, warm up to her performance as Shirley in this movie. But I think as I am a fan of Josephine Decker's style, which is just kind of weird, almost like psychedelic and like these sort of disorienting dreamlike worlds. I really enjoyed this movie. I will say it's advertised poorly. It's advertised like a haunted house movie, but it isn't in no way that. It is not a horror movie. I wouldn't even call it a psychological thriller. It is a very tense drama about women, particularly wives, not necessarily mothers, like not what is necessarily expected of women as mothers, but what is expected of women as wives, and the service of genius and the labor that women get often shunted into doing in order to service their husbands' careers or whatever.
On brand for Elizabeth Moss.
Yes, for sure. And like it was very interesting to see, like, kind of in the context. Well, obviously these are themes that Shirley Jackson addressed a lot in her work. Of course. And so, yeah, it's very much like this type of story being told in the frame of it. I wasn't expecting to like it. I honestly went into it kind of a bit of a hate watch, but was very delighted. And I give the credit definitely to the director. But yeah, so that's on, yeah, I'm almost certain it's on Amazon. So if you've been on the fence about watching it and you've been advertised it, check it out.
Is it going to be like a tearjerker though? Is it like, no. Is it going to be a heavy watch or is it a light watch?
It's definitely a heavier watch. It does have an ending that is satisfying. It's not like Handmaid's Tale. It's not like you see women being like repeatedly brutalized. All of the women, particularly the character of Rose, who's sort of the main, has a very complex emotional life, very complex sexual life, like a complex, she is a full woman in a time where women were limited very, very, very much in their expectations. Like, I think probably the early 60s is when this movie takes place. Or 50s. Anyway, yeah, so I definitely would say check it out. But yeah, it's not heavy, like, yeah. I think it's a lighter movie than a lot of other ones out there, I guess. I don't know. Nobody dies. If you're concerned about that, nobody dies. So maybe you'll wish some do at the end of it. Speaking of the internet, I have ordered, obviously, if you can tell, a new microphone. Today is the first episode of the new microphone. I have also ordered a Wi-Fi extender. So if you are... I've been frustrated by some of the sound quality. Hopefully you'll appreciate the amount of money my husband is spending on this podcast as I remain unemployed and we march further.
Oh gosh, and you probably have nothing coming in with this coronavirus right now.
I was doing pretty good on my Etsy shop. I do a lot of like vintage resale, but since I cannot go to places to buy vintage now, I'm kind of running low. And yeah, there's just everything else I did was events, music festivals, craft fairs, theater performances. Yeah, so basically all industries that don't exist anymore. But we're doing fine. obviously we're doing fine enough that I'm buying like new podcast microphones. So. That said, though, if you are a business that would like to sponsor this podcast,
right? Podcasts get sponsors. Know. That's a thing.
Absolutely. Listen, I love stamps. I love mattresses.
What's that MeUndies one? Like, I listen to a lot of podcasts that have
MeUndies.
MeUndies.
Any of you, MeUndies. I needed a new mattress. I could gladly get my stamps.com. Subscription.
Postmates.
I was anything.
Audible. No. Hey.
Hey. No, we're here. We're ready for your money. Speaking of the devil, this was the one I thought of. So at the time, I wrote these notes. I watched these movies like a week or so ago. This seemed pertinent at the time. Now I'm still not sure. If I want to advocate for this, but I was going to advocate for TikTok teens. I know they get a bad rap.
What is the difference between TikTok teens and just TikTok people?
TikTok teens. I think teens utilizing TikTok as like a motivator for like social justice or trolling for good. So by the time this episode comes out, this will be a bit old hat and probably disproven. But Trump recently had his Tulsa, Oklahoma rally, which was in like, I don't know, like an 9,000 seat auditorium, and it was like half, or it might be an 18,000 seat auditorium and it was half full, or is a 9,000 seat, I don't know, whatever.
There's not very many people there.
Not many people showed up. He also had like an outside event area. Nobody showed up there, which I also would hope, you know, this speaks to the intelligence of people of Tulsa, Oklahoma. Like, people want to crap on small towns or Midwestern towns. They're not dumb. Nobody wants to die. Like, I think most people believe in like not going to events.
It doesn't. I did hear about the TikTok thing, but I think that it also has to do with the fact that people are actually just smart about coronavirus.
TikTok teens, back to TikTok teens, they, along with K-pop fans, they're also, I don't know what's going on.
4chan, 4chan.
Korean pop music fans banded together to, like, RSVP for tickets to this event.
I did see that on TikTok.
And, of course, did not go. And supposedly this was...
And I saw a news thing about that that said that they accounted for that because they did hear about it and they saw that it was going around and they accounted for it and they opened more reservations. But
that's
I
feel too.
I don't think that they accounted for as many as that they probably got. No. But I don't think that that's why there weren't people there.
Poll numbers also
It's
show.
Also Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's not like a populated area and people aren't flying anywhere right now.
Kind of my thought too, but I also was like, I love the idea of TikTok teens. My hope, more so than the reality of the story, is that this type of like lauded social activism will hopefully translate into a true youth movement to the polls.
Oh, like, I think it will. I saw another one recently, another trolling Trump since this event, where they're going on and they're adding items from the merch shop. Adding it to their cart and then not purchasing it. Because I guess it actually causes problems for stores when
and
a
like
bunch
their
of
inventory.
Yes. And so they're doing that. That's their new trolling, I guess, thing that's happening.
Think it's that kind of stuff. It's so dumb, but delightful. Especially if you're under 18, you legally can't vote yet.
That's what you can do, right? Like, you don't have your own money really yet. You know, just
that. Goblin DeVos, like, ruin any protections you may ever have as a student. Like, hell yeah. Like, troll hard. Use the weapons that you have.
It's not hurting anybody. It's not causing any problems.
It's great. I love that kind of social disobedience. Like, I love that kind of just shitty behavior.
Signing up people for mailing lists they don't want to be a part of. Like, totally. It's fine.
Listen, if my mom can sign me up for Redbook, these kids can sign these people.
Gosh, someone signed me up for Donald Trump's mailing list on email. I get his emails now.
You know what? I will say thankful that my mom has actually, she might be just still using an email I have, Jazz, I haven't used in 12 years, of like sending all those weird chain emails. All right, guys.
All right.
Let's get to it. We're talking about two fun movies today, both of which I feel I had seen many times, but again, first time I'd ever given a critical thought about, and one that brought up some surprising feelings for me. Oh. Those two movies are What About Bob and The Great Outdoors. I'm excited for this episode. It's summertime fun as we're locked indoors. So we're going to start off with What About Bob?
Just when Leo Marvin thought he was getting away from it all.
As of this afternoon, I'm taking my family on vacation.
His old friend Bob Wiley showed up.
Dr. Marvin!
Oh my God.
I really appreciate this.
I don't want any of you letting Bob into this house.
He's a sweet guy. Do we invite Bob over for dinner? Would you like some more chicken, Bob?
Will you stop that?
You're angry.
No,
I don't get it.
You're upset.
I'm on vacation!
Touchstone Pictures presents Bill Murray.
Hello, I'm Bob. Would you knock me out, please?
And Richard Dreyfuss.
This man is crazy!
Get out! Why'd you need to kick Bob out of the house?
He's not gone. That's the whole point. He's never gone!
Is this some radical new therapy?
You see?
What About Bob? Rated PG.
This movie came out in 1991, directed by Frank Oz, who has directed so many wonderful comedies. Some of my absolute favorites, like a lot of the Muppet movies, like Muppets Take Manhattan, Muppet Show, all that kind of good stuff. Starring, of course, Bill Murray, Richard Dreyfuss, Julie Haggerty, Catherine Irby, who you may know as a grown-up actress on Law & Order Criminal Intent, and also Charlie Korsmo, who was still, I think, acting, but was, like, a very popular child actor at this time. He was in Dick Tracy and, like, all those movies. If you have not seen this movie, IMDb says the plot is, a successful psychotherapist loses his mind after one of his most dependent patients, an obsessive-compulsive neurotic, tracks him down during his family vacation. And that's pretty accurate. That's a pretty accurate description of this movie.
Pretty good. That's a good one.
What's your history with What About Bob?
So What About Bob was a movie I definitely had seen, but I saw it when I was pretty young, and I remember feeling like it was an adult movie. And so I'd seen it. I remembered a lot of the parts of it when I was rewatching it. And my mom was a huge fan of it. And so I remember just her loving it. Like, if I was asked, like, what is one of your mom's favorite movies, this would be on the list of movies I said that she liked. Because it's one I associate with her, which is probably why I associate it with adults. Because, like, she thought it was so funny. And some of the content I probably didn't understand when I was a kid. And so it just went over my head. But it was a movie I knew was fun. Like, I thought, oh, that'll be a fun one to watch again when we chose it. So... that's my experience.
Yes, I was 11 when this movie came out. Definitely saw it in the theaters, and I was already a very weird child. So my biggest imprint I remember of that time of this movie is Charlie Korsmo's character Sigmund, who plays Dr. Leo Marvin's son, Siggy. And this kid is such... Even now, it's very funny to see this. You know, somebody was probably my age at that time, 10, 11 years old, talking about death and wearing all black and just being a little weirdo. And so, like, I felt very much a kinship to that character. And then, yeah, otherwise just saw it as, like, kind of a funny movie and Bob is this funny character. But this is still a movie I have watched over and over and over again. And it is so interesting as I've gotten older, I identify with Leo more and more and more, and I'm like, what does that say about my character, my personality?
I get that though, because like, as an adult, when you watch the movie, and I'm sure this is true for even adults at the time, you understand why that this is not appropriate.
Oh yes,
you know, right?
Absolutely.
Like, when you're a kid, you don't fully understand what's the big deal? This guy is nice. He's funny. Like, you know, like,
I definitely recognize now, like, it depends on what mood I'm in of how I react to this movie. Because I was in a foul mood when I watched it for this show, and my notes very much reflect that. But thinking about it, I'm like, I don't feel this harshly about this movie. So
well, and I think that, like, when I first started watching it, let me look at my notes real quick. I was feeling like it was funny. I was liking a lot of parts. It was like comical that he just didn't understand boundaries. But I remember feeling like, oh, this is uncomfortable because, like, he's doing things that are really wrong. Like, he is stalking this guy, and it's very inappropriate. And the only person who thinks it's inappropriate is Leo. And it's like, that felt weird.
Yes. Like, and, like, I wrote in my notes, if Leo was a woman, this movie would be a thriller. It would be a horror movie. Like, the lengths that Bob goes through to get to Leo, and, which I never really recognized before, Leo is so incredibly patient and kind to Bob for so long.
That's only because, though, of his arrogance, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
I feel like his patience is coming from not a patient place of a good person and just being patient with a person. It's more of like, I deal with people like you all of the time. Like, you know, like, I know how to deal with people like you. Like, you can't overcome me. I am in control, which I see what you mean. Like, if he was a girl, it could have been a thriller, but I think it could have still been this movie if it was a woman, if they did it exactly the same, because I feel like they fix it when you realize that Leo isn't in control. Like, it balances out once Leo also breaks. Then you're like, okay, this movie is two very crazy men that have both gone onto two different extremes. And they're both disconnected from reality. Bill Murray is disconnected from reality, thinking, you know, that he is allowed to talk to whoever and be friends with whoever. And Leo is disconnected with reality and thinking that he's untouchable, you know, and that he is going to be successful no matter what. You know, like, that's just a break of reality, too. You know, I thought it was, well.
That's super interesting because in my notes, I have, like, I wrote, like, I think viewing this movie as two broken men instead of one broken man and a lovable oddball who rescues him makes this a meaningful movie. That, like, despite their conflict, that Bob and Leo have the greatest communication than anybody else in the movie. Like, his wife, Faye, constantly gaslights Leo, his kids. And you do understand why, because, yes, like, their lives have so much clearly revolved around his career, but they also have this beautiful vacation home because of that. They have this wonderful life because of the professional drive he has, but at the same time, because of his sense of the superiority that he himself cannot explore his own vulnerability or emotions. He talks to his family through puppets. He says, I don't get mad. I don't get upset. And
it's like, yeah, he's got to disconnect. Yeah. From reality,
he has to disconnect, and it's like, what are the expectations of someone who listens to a problem for a living, and who can he turn to when he has these problems? And it turns out to be Bob. And Bob, as someone who has lived his whole life with chronic, you know, debilitating mental illness, like, is very attuned to the language of psychology, to medications, and to the options. And the interesting thing is, like, he goes in to this relationship with Leo with the greatest openness to the treatment. And ironically, so does Leo, because he doesn't know anything. He is not told what Bob is like. So he has always this kind of an expectation of, like, of course you're reasonable. Of course these boundaries I'm setting are reasonable. They are reasonable. And Bob just bulldozes right over them.
Leo almost, he's not allowing it, but he does allow it because he thinks, because of his superiority, he forgets that he is still susceptible to potential risk and problems.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he doesn't, but another thing that's, is Bob, I wrote that Bob is like a therapist's worst nightmare because he's like, he's in balance for sure. And he is totally stalking him, but he's not malicious. And so it's almost, it's super problematic because you can't fix the situation very easily. And, like, even someone like Leo can't overcome it. You know, even someone as successful as Leo doesn't know how to deal with Bob on his own, you know, and so.
What was so fascinating to me is like there's a scene, and I you saying this right now kind of triggered this for me. There's the part where, you know, he sees Bob on the lake and they let him use the shower or whatever like that. And like they get in the argument and Bob just starts going, I need. And it is very funny. But at the same time, it's like it shows the difference. Like Bob is so is saying like, these are my problems. I'm crazy in all of these ways. And I need this attention and I need your validation and I want friendship and I want love and I want warm, positive relationships in my life. Where Leo cannot, he does. He absolutely needs all of these things. He needs validation so badly. He does an echoing whining scene at the beginning where he's like trying to decide where he's going to stand in the room and Faye's like, I don't know, they're all fine. And he's like, I need an opinion. I need validation. Like, and he can't see how they're both similarly struggling in these systems that tell them as men, they neither of them should want this. And that is what right. is so sad, is that as they are men, and I really found the whole diving thing with Siggy to be kind of awkward and dumb, but it is the same thing. Like, you just have to jump in the water. You can't acknowledge your fear. You have to jump in the water. But he is a psychiatrist. Every day he's asking his patients, acknowledge your fear, work through your fear. But actually he just writes this bullshit book, you know.
Yes,
you voice baby that off steps. And do your baby steps and do that.
It is.
And like,
yeah. And like naming your kid Sigmund, I wrote like, oh my God.
Oh my God, the name. I'm glad you got the name. Talk. So, just functionally as a movie, start to finish, like, oh my God, I love the title sequence with the fish. It really is such a unique and beautiful, simple title sequence. I love when a movie, every part, start to finish, really incorporates, like, the feel of this movie. I thought that was really beautiful. Another great Crow movie, like you understand these people right away. Yeah. And I just found like there was so much humor and what I was getting to talking about the names is the scene when Bob and Leo first meet and Bob comes into his office and tries to name his family just looking at their picture. And it's those moments, and they're all over this movie, that are just so funny. And as aggravating as Faye can be, like Julie Haggerty is, again, she is such wonderful comic timing. There's so many weird scenes, like the dinner scene where Bob's just making the weird noises and there's nobody's talking, but that scene is so funny. And like, you connect so deeply with Leo in that scene though. Like, there's a frustratingness that, again, like looking at this from a modern perspective, like, is Leo being gaslit? Like, yes. Like, Faye is letting one of his patients sleep in their son's room. That is not okay. Like, there's something profoundly not okay about that.
At the same time, he's not a true patient yet, right?
Like, he has taken on his care. Like,
he has taken Leo on his care, but like, it's also like a disconnect because he doesn't know him very well. Like, no. He knows nothing about him. He's had one meeting and not even one therapy session with this man.
No.
And yeah. So it's like, there's no deep connection between the two of them, but there's this deep hatred already. Like this, like, oh, you're doing it wrong. Like, you are not doing this correctly. Whereas like, because there is this prescription of like the way you're supposed to behave with your therapist. And like, Leo is such a like rule follower and just being like, we need to do everything by the book and do it the right way. Whereas Bob is like, but we need to do this because it's going to be better for me if we do it this way, you know, and like, it's going to be more beneficial to my care.
Or Leo's just idea of like, to be a good husband, to be a good father, like I have to hold all my shit together despite who knows what I'm hearing from patients all day long. I don't get mad. I don't get upset. Mm-hmm. I don't do this. I don't do that. And like he sees like his lack of vulnerability, like Anna expresses it to Bob in the car. Like, I have problems just like everybody else. I want to talk to my father, not a therapist. And like the ways that like Bob is just so open emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And his family instantly gloms onto him because that is what Leo is not providing them. But again, Leo is trapped in this. To me, looking at it from an idea of like masculinity, Leo is trapped in this idea of expertise, of lack of vulnerability, of being this fortress that literally makes him go into a catatonic state. Like, loses grip on everything that's happening. I mean, Jesus Christ is going to kill a man.
Right.
Then even the failure of that, it sends everything.
I would say if he didn't try to kill Bob, if Leo hadn't tried to kill Bob at a point in the movie, I would have had a bigger issue with Bob being unstable in like following them around.
Yeah.
Because I kept being like, I really like this movie. I really wish Bob had just randomly been in that vacation spot himself for another reason and ran into Leo and just was mildly inappropriate crossing boundaries, running into his daughter and just getting along with her and running into his wife and then just happening to get along with her, but not trying to, like accidentally being in these situations. But then as soon as Leo tries to kill him, I'm like, nope, it's okay. It's
exactly.
Okay.
Well, I think that's like, yeah, it has to, because I feel that that shows like both of these men, like they are the same. Like they are the same.
They're on other ends.
They are made for each other. And they both have this extremity, and it is as, you know, Bob comes to Leo at his worst state. He can't leave his house. He's home all day and all this stuff. And then by the end, like, he has a book coming out. He's got his PhD. He's getting
married.
And
to
Leo
his sister.
And Leo is, like, a bathrobe-wearing, drooling vegetable man.
But still angry. Which just to me, like, it was really perfect because the movie starts off with you really, like, as an adult, this is how I felt, is, like, Bob is broken. He's got issues. He's got problems. You know he does. But by the end of the movie, you feel the exact opposite. You're like, you know, Leo's got issues.
He's crazy.
And he needs to get over them. Bob is fine now.
Yeah. And it is so interesting, like, to think, like, it is sort of like the ultimate brother-in-law, like the cliche brother-in-law relationship, but you have these two very antagonistic forces. But I do like this idea of, like, both of these men are broken. Both of them are caught in systems of, whereas Bob has become so oversensitive to everything, like being an attack from just like the bullying of the world, Leo has made himself so impervious that, you know, nothing gets in. And so these two like kind of can meet this equilibrium. But it's interesting because both of them are like screaming to be brought, to be dragged into this thing. But I think, you know, Bob is the person who's just more open to change.
He recognizes his flaws and wants to fix them, whereas Leo doesn't really recognize his flaws. He blames his flaws on anybody around him. Like, he doesn't blame them on himself more. And so it's like, that's why in the end he's not successful at like overcoming his issues with his, you know, himself. He still doesn't believe they're his issues.
Well, also, though, we could say that Bob has not actually helped himself at all. He has merely completely taken over Leo's family, and he has just this, like, vessel for his neurosis. He's like, he just took over his life, and it's like, oh, like, I'm going to single white female my way into mental health.
But
like, I don't
know. Very, very positive, likable way.
Like, that is kind of a Frank Oz touch. Like, he always can find this dark. There's the silver lining, but there's the dark. The cloud is still dark, you know. Always that twist, and it is still, it's very ironic. Like, he always can find the humor, yet also dark irony in a lot of that. And I think, like, it's a movie, like, I really liked thinking about. Like, I was surprised by when I just wrote down my thoughts at the moment, but how I really reflected on that. When I think about also just the context of this movie, like, I think culturally, like, this kind of started a new era of like normal, like, so many movies about therapy and being in therapy, and like, I mean, I'm not a Woody Allen fan, but like to give credit, like it was another like kind of these the beginning, but also we just see this increasing acceptance of the discussion. And I'm not saying this is an accurate or realistic portrayal of mental health, but the idea of just like people having mental health issues, but also can get along in the world, are able to like seek treatment or whatever, become experts, or just in general, in the case of Bob, like becoming like the master of his own destiny, that he was able to move beyond whatever weird data entry he was limited to doing from his apartment to helping other people, writing this book, and et cetera, et cetera. Again, like this is a comedy movie.
Right.
But I do think that it kind of shows that like, and it never says that he stopped going to therapy or stopped taking medication, just that he was able to find treatment that helped him do, again, I can argue that his treatment was taking the life of another man.
I was like,
but hey, that works for you.
Is he like just a super master manipulator and just in complete control and just knows he's going to get what he wants if he behaves a certain way? Like, because I mean, I don't think that that was the intent, but it did feel like that every once in a while that you're like, wait, does he know that he's doing this? And they're like, nope, he thinks that he's not killing him. He thinks he's just having therapy right now. Just totally oblivious to the fact that Leo's trying to murder him and just thinks he's
totally
in therapy.
Like, and I think, his earnestness, as weird as the scene is when he has, like, his sleepover with Siggy, that is actually a pretty funny scene where you have this neurotic boy who is failing to connect with his father the same way that Bob is failing to connect with Leo, and kind of explain to him, like, well, this is why I have this hypochondriacal instinct to think I have problems, because if I think I have, you know, like his explanation at the beginning of it. So like there's the Tourette scene, but like to me it's like there's no way anybody would think this would be manipulative. This is crazy. Right. Like this is silliness, but like you see him making this connection, helping this boy get over his own fears that have just become larger than life, than any 10-year-old should have to be thinking about.
But like that's where Leo's mind goes too. Absolutely. He starts to think that Bob is trying to do something.
Absolutely.
And that's where you're
just
like,
it's just a rational thought. Like, I mean, honestly, like, you're gonna lie to your sister and that you're dead. Like, you would think, like, I'm not gonna let this man in my house sleep with my kid. That is not an irrational thought in general.
Yeah.
But also, you know that that is not necessarily why Leo's thinking that. His thought is a lack of control on my part. Like, this is not what I want. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's a lot about that. All right,
and
are we ready?
I wanted to say that the heightening of this film as a someone, now that I've like learned about improv or sketch writing and like comedic timing and heightening, and it's perfect.
Yes.
Like on its steps of like building the comedy and not just like it doesn't go doing like these big things in the beginning. It's small and it like just starts to get more and more. It makes you so comfortable with the choices, even though they're so absurd. You know, you're just like, this would never happen in real life, but it makes it seem so realistic because it gets
you from like his apartment to Leo's office. And so at this point we see where Bob went from. We see that he gets the glimpse of Leo's world. And we never go back, except for when he's at the bus station. And we never see him go back to that world again. He stays in this warm, in the Lake Winnipesaukee world, in the vacation world, in this beautiful, like, the big house that they're in. I like
just
that they make
the house. Just little baby steps. With just little baby
little
steps.
Little baby steps. And it is kind of funny. And that is the other thing, is that Bob's admiration for Leo is also sincere. He is never being glib. He is all like, he is the only one who worships Leo in the way that he wants his children and his wife to see him. Like, Bob is the only one who sees him the way he wants to be seen. And is also
but
the one who
helps him. But he sees him incorrectly.
Oh, absolutely. He sees the facade. And like, and he is also ironically the person who brings out the most vulnerable true self of him, which takes again. Yeah. Intense institutionalization.
Right. Oh man. Yeah.
It's so funny. So my verdict originally, bringing up the verdict, I originally said Cherish with an asterisk because I still was in a sour mood, but I'm just going to say it's a true Cherish.
Yeah, it's a true Cherish for me. I felt Cherish. I think that I was like, oh, Cherish, absolutely. As soon as Leo was putting bombs on Bob, it fixed everything I had a problem with in the beginning of the movie.
I will say, when he comes back to the house and all of his friends are there and he looks like he's been attacked and no one asks what happens to him, it made me so sad for Leo. I was just like, I got so mad.
That's so funny. Because when I was watching this movie, I did not have very much sympathy for Leo because I felt like he was such an arrogant dick of a man. Yeah. I don't like people who feel that good about themselves. Anytime I want them to
leave. I think it's the thing. I'm a narcissist, so I'm like, oh, Leo. I'm an emotionally withholding douchebag.
I know. Just like, get out of your head, baby step man.
Oh, Leo,
see that your son needs some real dad, not some puppet dad.
Okay. Puppet dad.
Jump on the bed with him. Be a kid. I think is I've always had a very fun parents, the people who have not ever really taken anything seriously. It's hard for me to watch parents be serious. It's I'm just that's never gonna work.
I guess for me, I grew up in a condo, so I'm like, your dad buys you a lake house, shut up. Be happy for what you get.
I mean, I didn't have a lake house or anything either. No. Let's be real.
No, most people most people. All right, speaking of summer fun
and also families that had better upbringings than me.
I had some similar. It's interesting. I watched this movie second, so it was fun to see the two. Or no, I watched this movie first, so it was fun to see.
Yeah, the guys they don't own the app. So we have the Great Outdoors next.
This is Chet.
You remember me, Chet Ripley?
How you doing?
This is his family.
You can run around here naked as a bear and not worry about running into anybody.
This is Roman.
What a gas.
This is his family.
I'm waiting for the heads to rotate around and vomit pea soup.
They're about to spend 1 week together in the great outdoors.
We weren't invited.
They'll be tickled to death to see us.
Who invited them anyway?
But this is no holiday.
The man is an ass.
This is war.
This was released in 1988. It's directed by Howard Deutsch. D-E-U-T-C-H. And it was written by John Hughes. Actually, I read a little bit about this after we watched the film. John Hughes couldn't direct it because he was directing Planes, Trains, and Automobiles at the time. And so it was directed by Howard because I guess they worked on projects together before. And it was
he was the director of Pretty in Pink.
Yeah.
And I think Some Kind of Wonderful, which I never saw that movie. But yeah, he was, I think a big collaborator with.
It stars Dan Aykroyd, John Candy, Stephanie Farse. Is that how you say her name?
Farse.
And then she's not actually listed on the top billing, but Annette Bening's also in this movie. I think this was one of her first big film.
Yeah, which making. I had forgotten about that, and I was like, oh yeah, she plays the wife in this.
Yeah, and so if you haven't seen The Great Outdoors, or if it's just been a really long time, you don't remember what it's about a Chicago man who is John Candy, he wants to take his family on a nice little trip in the woods. It's something that they do, I think, not super regularly from the feeling of it, but he gets his plans and his dreams of having this wonderful vacation with his family are shattered when his in-laws drop in. And so, I don't know what your experience. What was your experience with this before we rewatched it?
I had seen it tons of times. I always remember really enjoying it. I remember most stuff of the bear, the guy who's been struck by lightning a bunch of times. There's a lot of things. Yeah, definitely, like, I had a very much a child's memory of it, and it had been a minimum of 10 years since the last time I've seen it. Yeah, definitely one of my, probably a childhood favorite. I definitely enjoyed this movie more than, like, National Lampoon's Summer Vacation.
Like, I don't really remember that one very well.
That's the one they go to.
I only remember the Christmas one very, you know, that's the one I remember of National Lampoon. But yeah, this movie for me, like, I don't know how many times I watched it. I know I watched it at least once because I remember similarly as you. Like, I remember the bear. I remember the two little girls. I didn't remember the lightning guy until I saw it. Like, before I did, when it happened in the movie, I remembered that brought back memories. But prior to watching, I had only really, what I had, like, remembered was that there was a family vacation, that there was a bear involved with a bear story, and, like, those two little girls. That's what I remembered. And yes. I actually didn't even really remember when I read the description of the movie. I didn't even properly remember who played what character. Because when I read the description, I assumed that John Candy was going to be the one crashing the party. Because, like, to me, John Candy is the, whoa, here I am. And, like, Dan Aykroyd's going to be the one. I mean, I know Dan Aykroyd's been funny before, too, of course, and goofy. And, like, I wasn't surprised by it when I was watching the movie. I just was like, oh, I assumed the wrong direction. Like, I thought that Dan Aykroyd was going to be the guy doing the vacation.
It's funny, like, as a kid, Dan Aykroyd was a kind of a big turnoff for me in this movie. I really liked Dan Aykroyd in general. I love Ghostbusters. But there was something about Roman that I really had a hard time connecting with. But watching again as an adult, like, Roman is a very broad character. Like, his Roman is such, like, a over the top, like, kind of pompous ass. But I love, like, his Kara and Mara are so weird. Annette Bening is kind of like they temper that character so much. Like, I really found them very engaging, and I kind of understood, not necessarily his character, but the dynamics between John Candy's character Chet and Roman much more. Like, now being an adult, seeing in-law relationships, because I had a pretty small family, so there wasn't, like, I didn't really understand these types of dynamics. I agreed, like, I couldn't remember, like, how are these people related again? Like,
they didn't really make that clear early on.
The wives are sisters.
But that was actually very unclear even in the movie.
Absolutely.
And I remember being like, because it shouldn't be assumed that they're related through their wives. But I feel like the movie was almost saying, you should just know this.
Yeah.
Because, like,
but I kind of appreciated that. Like, this movie and What About Bob both, they just got right to it. And I think they use a lot of shorthand for showing these two families. Like, to me,
I just wish it was clearer. I felt like, because when I first automatically assumed, when I knew that they were in-laws, I actually assumed that John Candy was related to Annette Bening. I thought John Candy was Annette Bening's brother.
Yes.
That's what my first thought was when I realized that they were in-laws.
Yes.
I was like, oh, Annette Bening must be his sister. Because to me, that made some sense. I mean, so does the sisters being married, too, of course. Like, being sisters, too. But I wish it was clearer.
It makes a little more, the one thing, well, you know, what's interesting is what made more sense to me is that, like, I feel now, being married, knowing more married people, I automatically knew they were sisters. Because I'm like, if this was John Candy's direct related sibling spouse, I think he would say more. And the fact that he is now twice removed, he kind of just has to go along with it. Because at the end of the day, that's like his wife's sister. Kind of a minimal thing. But yeah, it was, I kind of appreciated that, just sort of get to it. And they sort of show you, they just show you these two families. Like, you see this family in the car, and they're almost, like, impossibly sweet. But at the same time, there's, like, a realistic amount of, like, pushback from the kids.
They seem like a real family, for sure. It was one of the more realistic, like, I mean, and the son was actually so respectful as a son.
So, and what's so funny is I always used to find the son's little plot line with the girl in town to just be so, like, what is the point of this? And it realized, like, especially talking about this, like, in the relationship to What About Bob and, like, men and, like, how men are supposed to act or are supposed to be, like, Chet, John Candy's character, is, like, a very emotional, sensitive, sentimental, man, they show him very sexual. Like, he's a big guy. Like, they show this as, like, a married, like, a chubby married guy, father of two, as, like, a sexually engaging, sexually interesting, and satisfying partner to his wife. Like, it is like this kind of ideal family, and I recognize that his emotionality with his kids and what it becomes the big crux between him and Roman and the way he helps Roman grow as a man and as a father is being played out in his son, Buck. And, like, it is Buck meeting this girl, and he's not an asshole. Like, he's really trying to be just honest with her and emotional with her. And, like, he's standing at the dock at the end, like, just talking his feelings out loud. And, like, his father portrayed that for him. Like, it is Chet's dedication to staying open and loving and all of these things to his family. But at the end of the day, this dude just wants to have a vacation. And then his shitty brother-in-law shows up and feels like it's trying to undo.
Right. You know, like, but he's trying at the same time, he's not open, right? No. He's not open to his brother-in-law. Brother comes in with some really fun things that his kids are going to be known for.
And it's his own sense of self-esteem and his own ego that he is almost, like, preventing his sons from having a really good time.
And not just accepting of the changes of, like, rolling with the flow that now it's not just a family vacation, which of course sucks. The plans changed. But, like, I got why they were there. Like, with Annette Bening and Dan Aykroyd's characters, it's just like, they're like, we invite them all the time to blah, blah, blah. Like, they should invite us to this. And I was like, yeah, they should. Like, you know, why not make it, like, a fun little family thing? You know, why not make it work?
Family, and, like, I do think, like, those types of liberties are absolutely the types of liberties people take with family. Like, I feel like there was so much believability, there's so much about Roman splashiness and, like, you know, especially if you have younger kids, and depending on what kind of work you have, like, you know, if you have an older kid who might be going to college, like, your level of spending is going to be very different. Like, they're so and just
they're similar ages.
And it is. It's like, Chet can be the sweet, open, loving guy, but when it's really tested, when it's really challenged, like, can he keep...
Can he get his ego out of it? Can he keep his ego out of it?
And can he recognize, like, can he model for his sons what it means to be, like, a good dad? Not just a good dad, like, a good person. Like, a good family person or whatever.
Another thing that was, like, unclear for me in the movie that, like, kind of, like, bothered me was I didn't really understand why they disliked each other. Like, why John Candy disliked Dan Aykroyd so much. I felt like they were trying to play it off as, like, John Candy was not as wealthy as Dan Aykroyd. And so there was the issues between, like, the lavishness of Dan Aykroyd's wealth with his, like, custom plates, his fancy car, and his, like, you know, they had these, like, fake money, basically, because it sounds like they were struggling. But John Candy's family, they weren't wealthy. They weren't poor. They were going on a family vacation and they ended up staying in a beautiful lake house. Like, it was like middle class versus rich. Is that what we were fighting over? Is, like, John Candy just wishes he was, like, lavishly wealthy, and that's why he's upset at Dan Aykroyd, because he's not? Like, I don't get why John Candy didn't like Dan Aykroyd.
Roman, and, like, the kind of the idea that I got, and I also wanted to take a very quick stop just to say I love the casting of the couple who runs that resort where the cabin is.
Oh, yeah. They're really, so ridiculous. Really
delightful. To me, it was, like, it's like the shorthand of an you know, like, someone who's just a loud mouth. They always have the coolest thing. They've always been the best places. Like, no matter what story you have, they have one better. And it is kind of a tiring thing. And also, I think Roman also, you know, clearly by the end of the movie, we see, like, it's all bullshit. But I do think that there is a lot of ego and, like, fragility behind Roman's personality as well. And I feel that he comes in this big, big, big personality, so people don't question. So people don't look behind the facade. I think, like, again, like, it's so quickly kind of patched together where Roman has this sudden thing where he's this great father, but, and he even talks about it point blank with, there's a scene where he's in the bathroom with his wife, she's in the shower, and he's like, you know, look at the way his kids, Chet's kids look at him, like, I want my kids to look at me that way. Like, and it's like, right. This, again, it's the two men who have the most animosity actually have the most in common and are really digging the deepest with each other, which is what, you know, Chet's insecurities are about finances and wealth and being able to provide for his family. Roman's things, which to me feel much more dire, is his inability to emotionally connect with his children and his fear that he will not be a significant presence in their lives. Like,
yeah,
you know, and it's interesting to see these two movies kind of address both of those things in ways like, and made at a time, 1988, 1991, like, really talking about roles of men. And I feel in this movie, far more than What About Bob, that even though Connie, Chet's wife, and Roman's wife, played by Nick Dunning, I can't remember her name, they don't have a ton of scenes, but they both have very distinct personalities. Like, they have very distinct emotions and, like, reactions to their husband, and in both cases, like, are very loving to their husbands, and, like, are supportive of them, but you can tell are just like, you're gonna figure your shit out on your own time. I got kids to deal with. Like,
yeah.
You guys deal with whatever. Like, I'm here with my sister. Like, I have to deal with you all the rest of the time. You know what I mean? And so I did kind of like that kind of aspect to it. And there was just a lot of things that I just kind of had forgotten. I was like, oh, I really find this just overall as a movie, like the raccoons.
The raccoons were cool. I like that they did captions for the raccoons too. I think that was very impactful. The bear I felt like was fun, but I didn't really like that his butt was shot off.
The ending of the movie, like, I, as a kid, I realize this is a children's movie. There's so much happening because there's not only just the bear, there's also a storm. And then also the twins are in like a mine. That's getting flooded, and it's just, there's so much that happens. Like, they have to do so much to get this connection for Roman, where I'm like, the twins could have just wandered off. That's stressful enough. Or there could just be,
I did feel like there was a lot about the movie in general, which maybe has something to do with, like, it just maybe not connecting with the writer, director, because they didn't need to work on it together, because maybe John Hughes wasn't around. I don't know what was happening, but it felt like rushed in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Especially around the ending, like you're saying, like tying up the loose ends, like not like a little too quickly. It's like, wait, what are we doing here? Well, like maybe it was because it's just a family film. They didn't care that much, but.
The big rubber bear butt, my note.
Well, oh, no.
Now I know what the ending of Boogie Nights reminds me of. What's the big rubber bear butt?
Like, that's so funny. I didn't like that either. I felt like they were almost, I know it wasn't sexualizing the bear, but I'm like, why do we have to see the bear's ass? You know what I mean? And like earlier in the movie, the comment, I wrote it down because it made me uncomfortable. As much as I liked that character, those characters that had that, like the couple, they made that comment about the dog in the beginning about how the son, too bad you're not a dog, she's in heat. I was just like,
so weird, gross. And gross. What I didn't like about the ending, when Roman pulls the con, when he's at the cabin and he's like, well, you said this in the bathroom and da da da, and he gets the check from them and everything moves so fast, and you see this look on Connie's face, like she's just dazed, like, what is happening? Like, what? Like, we just had this vacation and now we're giving away our kids' college fund. Like, what is happening? It is so affecting. And like, you know, Roman turns around and then they have the whole thing out. And it's like, I feel so much of that gets undone by this manufactured frenzy with the bear and the storm and the blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Like, there's just too much going on there. I do get, like, they're making these different, like, I guess, like, this is the thing to me, like, I guess it's supposed to prove to his kids, to Chet's kids, that his original story isn't a lie. This is the thing that really happened. Here is the bald-headed bear. But I think there are ways they could have accomplished that without, I don't know, like, I did find it very,
Have the bear show up and don't shoot him again.
And don't shoot him again. It just runs away, or I don't know. I do find it very funny that he plugs the lamp, the shotgun lamp, in to shoot it. That made me laugh.
But like, I feel like, you know, you shoot up and scare the bear. You don't have to shoot
something. But yeah, then you're like, what is with this bear's hide that it just like flings off? There's no damage to its butt. The bat scene is also very funny. And what is funny about that, like, a very similar thing happened to Steve's family once. But it was more than a bat, like an entire menagerie of forest creatures came in through a basement door that got left open. It made me laugh very hard. I had totally forgot about that ending dance sequence. I was like, oh yeah, there's like this whole part. Like, yeah, I don't know. Both of these movies, like, ugh, this movie made me want to take a goddamn vacation so bad. I wanted to go to a lake so badly.
I know. I want to go to a carnival. Oh, that was one note I had about the girl storyline. There was one, I didn't put it in this notes, but I remember she says something at a point, you don't know how from here I am. I'm like, what, did she like live at the amusement park?
She
like,
did
what?
Have very funny phrases. Like, are they going to make her a ghost or something? Like, always found that B plot to be very boring, but it did make more sense to me now.
Sort of unnecessary, but when you were making those points, I was like, that is true. That it was nice that they were doing that, like making showing, because he was a nice kid to her too. I felt that same thing, but I did still feel like it was unnecessary, especially because they left so many other things like too quickly finished.
Yeah.
That if they had cut that part out, they may have been able to resolve some of the other stuff a little bit more. Clearly,
yeah,
I never would have
missed that. Yeah, had they taken it. But it was still it hit a little better than I remember it being. Just definitely for sure another instance where I really in turns identified both with Chet and Roman. I have definitely been the loudmouth show off. I've definitely been the person silently stewing in the corner because things aren't going my way. You know, like, and as an adult, I definitely see that more.
I feel like I identified maybe with Annette Bening's character more than anyone else in that one. Just being like, wait, what's going on?
I'm just drinking. I'm on the boat. I don't know. Whatever.
Where are the kids?
Exactly. Oh my god. Are we ready to pass a verdict on this movie?
Yeah.
What do you pass? What do you say?
I'm gonna say perish for me.
Yeah.
There was some good things, but I think it could be I don't think people need to see it necessarily. There's a lot that came out around the time when I wrote was like, I recommend Planes, Trains, and Automobiles because I feel like, you know, John Candy. It's a solid. I haven't seen it in recent years, but I am confident that I'd feel positively about it.
I feel it deals with similar issues. Like, I feel it deals with similar ideas of like masculinity and vulnerability and emotionality. And I think, like, thinking about the time that these movies came out, like, yes, the 60s did start certain transitions, but I definitely think the 80s and early 90s is when this idea of like being vulnerable as men and like dealing with emotional stuff. For me, this movie was a cherish. I think compared to a lot of other, when I think of like summer family comedies, like this just was like a really, it made me feel good. Like when I think about like National Lampoon's, the Griswolds are a very smarmy, shitty family. And they're supposed to be. That's the National Lampoon's humor. It is not really meant to be heartwarming. It is just joke. Like, it was like the precursor to, you know, Always Sunny in Philadelphia or something. But The Great Outdoors, like, it really, I just enjoyed watching these two men. I feel like it gave a rare opportunity for Dan Aykroyd to stay in like a big character. He always plays these big characters. But like a lot of the ways that his character, Ray, whatever his last name is in Ghostbusters, like he's very, there is a vulnerability there. Like there is a bravado, there's a front to like, a sensitive little weirdo behind there. And I think that comes out a bit in this movie. Maybe in like not exactly the most subtle ways, but yeah, like this movie, like if I had kids or something, like I definitely would feel good. Like this would be like a fun summer comedy movie. don't think it had, there's nothing in here that I felt gross about. Like, there was no added displayed that I was like, ugh. You know, that unless they were meant to be, like, a bad yeah. guy or something like that. Like, and I that was, like, a nice change of pace. It was just something that I was like, oh, man, like, I got to see both a greater depth in this movie than I ever thought I would, and nothing surprised me in a bad way. And so, yeah, I would say.
Cherish
for me. Yes, 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 yes. That's it. That's it on these movies, guys. Any takeaways you have? I think I kind of said.
Yeah, I feel like I don't have any additional takeaways. Just about, like, I think that you've kind of. I felt the same way about, like, the masculinity showing different men doing different things. So I think that was a good takeaway for sure.
Yeah. And just like, like roles of fatherhood and like what it means to like forgive or change or
create. Be sensitive and like, I feel like you're right. Your Great Outdoors did a better job of that though than What About Bob? Because I feel like Leo was still not on board with being the sensitive dad.
Even though it was clearly not what
he should have been.
Oh, it's just kind of funny. It's like, you know, if you want to get even, like, meta-political, like, if Leo is the man, like, the system would rather, like, completely shut down altogether than change in compassion towards others. Like, defund it all. All right. It is time for lightning round. I'll read them. We'll both vote on them.
Yeah. Let's do it. All right.
Adult dance, Cherish.
Yeah, Cherish. 100% Cherish. More people should do it.
Manual transmissions.
I'm going to say Parrish because I don't know how to deal with it.
Cherish because it makes you feel like, powerful. Chanel suits.
Whatever. Parrish. I don't care.
Some of these, did I put these on the wrong one? This all seems to kind of pertain way more to House of Yes. Did I leave the same ones on here? I don't know. Class warfare. Cherish. Always strife among the classes. Until there are no classes. Road trips, sing-alongs.
Cherish.
I'm gonna say Parrish. I'm not a big singing fan.
It's so fun. It reminds me of like my childhood.
we never listened to music in the car, but there were no good singers in my family. Like this, the voice that you're hearing right now, this is the most melodic voice.
I didn't say we were good at it. We had a good time.
Just happening. Booked by therapists. Parrish. Enough self-help, Parrish. Guys.
Yeah, and also just like, it feels to me like such a stroke of ego when you write a book about your job. It's just like, oh.
But also, it's like a lot of it, like even like the best, like Brene Brown quotes and all, it's like, you know this. Like so much of this stuff is like creating, to me, a cottage industry where people don't believe that they could possibly like figure. I don't know. I'm sure there are people that are helped by it, but. I don't know.
Maybe limit them, okay? Like, let's have only, like, 10 maybe a year instead of 100.
Bullshit. Also, like, just so many of them are bullshit. And that's it's like, problem. Oh, well, like, Dr. Oz.
Some of them are called baby steps, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, Parrish. I say Parrish. Parrish it. Parrish books. No, I'm sorry. any suggestions for the people to consume?
You know, I'm going to suggest, and I don't know if I don't think I've mentioned this before. I didn't check the log, but I don't think so. Space Force. I'm going to recommend Space Force.
Oh, yeah, on Netflix. I started watching it. I love Tawny Newsom, and so I mainly am just, like, watching it to support her, and I want her to be in everything. It's taking a while to grow on me.
It takes a while to grow on.
I just never at any time is it bad. It's just a different pacing. I hate advertising. I think that's the problem. Advertising tells you a show is going to be something, and then you show up for it, and it's something else.
That's true. The
advertising, and I think it's something else. It's a lot. Like, I mean,
Malkovich is
so good. It's just a very subtle. It's a much more subtle show. Then it's not The Office in a military base. Like, it is not that.
No,
it's not a sci-fi show.
New vibe, honestly. It feels like a new show vibe. Sort of reminded me of this show called Eureka.
Yeah, that sounds very familiar.
Like sci-fi show on like probably the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, and it wasn't necessarily good. I watched a lot of that one, but it was hard. It was like nice, you know, it was like a nice break from reality in a way. But it has some of that vibe, but done with a bigger budget. So it's a better show than
the show.
Eureka,
visually is lovely. There's some pacing and like information parceling decisions that they've made that I don't understand, but I kind of forgot about it. I should check out a few more episodes of that.
Watch them all.
Space Force.
What do you recommend?
I recommend, if you have listened to this podcast, it will not surprise you to know that I am a fan of jazz, the most pretentious of the musical forms. And there is a new album out by, she is a jazz pianist, Connie Hahn, H-A-N. Her new album called Iron Starlet is out. Very good. If you like your jazz, fucking jazzy. Jazz album for you. This is jazzy.
If you're thinking jazz doesn't have enough jazz,
like the sound that, like, when the sound that happens in your head when someone says jazz, that's what this album is. It's very fun. Like, I really, really great. Especially, like, you know, if you're kind of stuck inside, you're feeling a little moody. Very fun. She just has like a really cool look. She has tons of music out, but the newest album is called Iron Starlet. She looks like she would be like a video game character that like both knows like karate and then also has like a laser whip or something.
Yeah, I just looked it up. She looks cool. Like almost a dominatrix type style with her outfit.
Cool look. She's very cool look. If you hear like the way she speaks is just very authoritative. I like love hearing interviews with her. So super fun if you just like want to find some new music. Connie Hahn's Iron Starlet. So yeah, that's my suggestion. I think it just came out. Very, very, very.
You're already on top of it.
I'm already on it. I will say I get some very good suggestions according to like my algorithmic likes through Google Music is who I use. But I think they're getting rid of Google Music and it's all going to YouTube Music. So hopefully.
You know what? I actually agree. I mean, I have TikTok and I am loving the algorithm that's set up for me for TikTok because it's like the more stuff I like, the more stuff I have to like. And I'm just like, oh, this is great content. Yeah. Like, they're really learning my style.
I listen to a lot of older music on that platform. And so the fact that like new releases that are like
accurate to
me
it.
Are still very great. And that's how I find like tons of new music.
Maybe I gotta try to listen somewhere else because like Spotify doesn't do a great job. I never really liked my Discover Weekly.
Spotify, you have to start a platform. Like what happened with me is I had a Spotify account. I made the mistake of liking anything, and then it fucks it all up because it's like it weighs those things way too heavily as opposed to what you actually listen to. So then when I started on a new platform, I don't like anything. I just listen to what I want to, and then my algorithm actually pairs down to what I like as opposed to songs I think about when I first start on a platform to say that I like. I don't know.
Like, well, yeah, but with Spotify, you have to like things to save them to like your like saved playlist or whatever, right?
Yeah, like I'll just have to look up, like certain bands, and like I kind of hate that, which is like another reason I don't really like Spotify. Pandora was the same way. So I'm hoping YouTube Music is owned by Google. I'm sure it's almost identical as far as Google Music to YouTube Music. So I'm hoping, that's my hope anyway. I think it will be very similar. Yeah. I'm also hoping, like, I have all my wedding playlists and stuff. I'm hoping I can save all that. Maybe iTunes or something. I don't know. Speaking of iTunes, you know, it's crazy. I keep saying these things. I realize by the time you hear these podcasts, all of these things have happened. But maybe, you know what, you can just see a little how the sausage is made when it comes to doing a podcast and how many episodes you can go before properly having it hosted.
You know what, you can record 100 of them. You can record 100 podcasts.
You can go as many as you want. So, yeah, we are on all of the platforms now. I will say, if you want to talk about episodes or communicate with us, cherishorperishpod.com. Our website is the best spot because you can comment on the posts of the episodes. Also, if there's fun things that come up in the media about movies we've talked about, I add that stuff to the blog. So like you can have all there. I recently just added a fun thing, at the 1992 premiere of Bram Stoker's Dracula, like the red carpet looks, go fug yourself blog. They had a thing on it, so that's linked on there. You can check out those fun fashions. There's some other stuff we'll probably add on there. I realized that we record about 3 weeks in advance, so there'll probably be other things I'll link on there. Like there was this, we're doing a Splash episode. There was a Splash reunion.
Oh yeah, the thing we talked about last week. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, there's all sorts of fun stuff going on the blog, so if you want to check that out as a part of, you know, apart from listening on your favorite podcast platforms, or you always can also email us at cherishorperishpod@gmail.com. Is there anything I'm forgetting? Oh, our next episode.
Yeah, are we going to do? What movies are we going to watch?
Our next episode, we are doing People Under the Stairs and Poltergeist. Spooky dooky stuff. But yeah, so if you have suggestions for us, great, those that aforementioned spots, those are where to tell us. Also subscribe, review, rate, wherever you're
seeing. You better definitely start making suggestions, because as many suggestions as we already have, I'm interested in knowing what other people want us to do. Because like we won't ever stop. I'm never gonna have a movie.
There's always content. There's always content happening out there. I feel like we're trying to rush through this episode, but we just had so much to talk about. I hope everybody is out there staying healthy, they're staying safe. I hope you're staying active. I know like the world seems that it's trying to get back to normal, but there's still so much work to be done. There's still all the causes that we have been protesting for and being active for still happening. So stay aware, stay motivated.
Wear a mask.
Wear a mask, for God's sakes, people, wear a mask.
It's not that hard.
Not that hard. Okay. All right. Bye.
All right, bye.